Hello, and welcome to another season of the Storied Arcs podcast. I am your co-host, Mike.
And I'm your co-host, Alex.
And this season, for our deep dive discussion of indie and creator-owned comics, we will be looking at some of the work of Kyle Starks. And today's episode, we will be doing a spoiler-free introduction to his book, Assassin Nation. I really have to put a space between those two words. Assassin Nation.
Assassination.
I was telling someone about it over the weekend, and they thought it was one word.
And well, I mean,
all their print, and they were like, "Oh,
that's the whole thing,
right? Yeah,
yeah.
But it's harder for people to look up the book on their library app if they mistakenly believe that it is two words. So I'm going to dive straight in with the.
Sorry, mistakenly, but it's one word.
Yes, one word. Right. Yeah. Wow. Or if they listen to the words I'm saying now. I'm going to read the synopsis from Image Comics, and then we'll dive in, I think, to the creative team and then the book itself.
Sure.
And hopefully get people jazzed for this book. And not a spoiler, but we do have Kyle Starks definitely coming on the podcast to discuss this. So this week we will do an intro, spoiler-free. Next week we will assume you have read the book. We'll discuss the entire book without Kyle's input. And then the following week we'll talk to Kyle.
Yeah, get his thoughts on it, which is great.
Okay, so, and this may be telling as to when the book came out, but here's the Image.com synopsis. Hot off her breakout success at Marvel, two-time Eisner winner Erica Henderson, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl and Jughead, teams up with Kyle Starks, writer of Sales Beast Rick and Morty, for a hilarious twist on the Hitman trope that will have readers laughing in the aisles over Assassin Nation. The world's former greatest hitman hires the 20 best assassins in the world to be his bodyguards. These mean-as-hell hired guns and murderers must work together to keep the new crime boss safe while attempting to solve the mystery of who's trying to off him. With the same laugh-until-you-cry spirit of action comedies like Hot Fuzz, Tropic Thunder, and Deadpool, Assassin Nation is the bombastic side-splitting murder fest you've been waiting for.
I mean, that's pretty good.
It is pretty good, although I do...
No lies told.
Two things in particular, calling it the second thing there, the laugh until you cry, and then the one laughing in the aisles, I think are... it is funny, and it's a comedy for sure, but I think that's the type of thing that Kyle like cringes over in the...
Yeah.
Because it's like, humor has some subjectivity to it, and... It's very rare that I'm like laugh out loud, you know, reading on the couch by myself. So well,
you're also
promising something that you're writing checks you may not be able to cash, no matter how funny it is.
Yeah, there's always a thing of like you can't tell someone that something's funny, or it's very difficult to. And I remember there was this there's a special on HBO where Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Ricky Gervais, and Louis C.K.
They
sat down and they just talked about comedy. And at one point they talked about like bombing at a show, which every comic has done. And it was Jerry Seinfeld who said that, you know, even at his height, you know, or coming up on his the height of his popularity, but as he was coming up and he was a name, the person who introduced him was like, blah, 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 like the funniest comic in the world, Jerry Seinfeld. And he said the audience, when he walked on stage, kind of all leaned back and crossed their arms and were like, oh, really? The funniest comic in the world? And he said, totally bombed. Like there was nothing he could do. There was no coming back from that because comedy, you're right, is one of the things you can't tell someone this is funny.
I think it's completely unfair to the author.
Yeah. Oh, 100%
to sell it that way.
Yeah. Now you can, what we can say is that the intent of this book is to be fun. There is meant to be humor in it as opposed to something that is, quote unquote serious, that obviously will have funny bits to it. Cause it, you know, there, you can always find humor in things and situations, but this book is a comedy book. It is meant to be funny, silly, and absurd. Whether or not you find it funny or as funny as someone else, you're right. Totally subjective. But I think we can safely say the intent of this book is to be a humor action comedy book, you know?
Oh, right. Yes.
Do you think that's fair? Yeah.
No question there.
Yeah, the intent is there.
Yes, the intent is there, and Kyle is genuinely funny. I mean, I've spoken to him in person a few times. I've read some of everything he's ever done, and it's just like,
he's one of those guys hilarious. He's one of those guys that it seeps in everything he writes, and I'm not saying that he can't write a book that is not funny, but he either is not asked to do that, or he doesn't want to do that. I will say, you know, as we go through kind of his CV in a little bit here, you know, most of his books are always tinged that way, whether he wants them to or not. I think he has some current books, or he has some books he's working on that are less focused on the humor, that are still funny, but you wouldn't classify them as like humor books, versus some of the other writers and comics, and the list is very small of guys that you would say are like quote unquote humor writers. Those guys have, I don't know, they either they've been asked to flex a different muscle, or at least have shown they can do it in a not comedic way, you know, but they still have those comedic chops when they want to. So it kind of, maybe it depends on what he's asked to do, and you know, and it maybe he feels typecast, he has to do a certain way, that this is that every book he does is a quote unquote Kyle Starks book, you know, that he's got a brand at this point, and either he doesn't want to veer outside of that, or I don't know, maybe he can't veer outside of that. I get the sense it's more he just doesn't want to, or he can't, you know, that he can't help but be himself when he writes.
Well, and I think that's a good thing, to have an established identity as a writer.
No, definitely. But you can't get typecast. You can't get put into a corner and say, this is all you can do. And maybe he's fine with that. But, you know.
Well, and I also think there's the thing that, like, I think a synopsis like that flattens comedy into, like, one mold. Whereas, like, you know, there are many varieties of, like, horror comics. Yeah. And there's certainly varieties of superhero, and I think comedy is just as elastic of it, because I would, you know, obviously Mark Russell, everything he does is comedy, but it's a very different type of comedy than what Kyle Starks does. Kyle Starks is character driven rather than like, here's a societal commentary with humor, which is Russell's lane, and then I think everything Sarah Gailey does has a sense of humor to it, but is not humor.
Yeah, I would say someone like Sarah Gailey is closer to Mark Russell in that it's situational, and that the thing you're, and not saying that, you know, that the situation that he puts, that both them put their characters in, can be fairly absurd and ridiculous, and the humor comes from that, comes from them almost taking the absurd situation seriously. You know, it's like all none of their characters are funny per se. They're all straight men in an absurd situation. I do think Kyle goes a little more out of his way to make his characters funny. You know, that's what he's attempting to do. He's attempting to have very weird, very strange, very different characters. Even though they are all, a lot of his books are often also in fairly absurdist situations. But I think you're right to point out that he's, when he writes a book, the comedy comes from the characters, comes from the people.
Understands little idiosyncratic moments that make things that make characters like, he doesn't pause showing us and teaching us about the characters for a joke, which I think is very like Dan Harmon-esque. You know, we get personality reveal through the jokes.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I'm just thinking, like, one of the funniest things to me in a Kyle Starks book, not the one we're covering, but in Peacemaker Tries Hard, at the beginning, Peacemaker's at the grocery store, he's buying protein powder in bulk and birthday cake mix. And the cashier says, are you making some kind of muscle cake? And he said, that's not really a thing. And then he's like, I should probably internet search later to see if that. And it's like, okay, like the guy isn't like totally detached from reality. He's like a little fool of himself, very vain, definitely into like muscle building and stuff. I don't know. It's like how Terry Crews' character in Brooklyn Nine-Nine loves yogurt. You know, it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, he's a big buff guy. And yeah. Every aspect of his character is feeding into another aspect of his character. Mm-hmm. And obviously, when your characteristic is muscular, you don't have to say it out loud very often. Even though Kyle gets his characters to say that. Whereas, like, if a character feels snarky, that has to come out through dialogue. You can't just look at the way they're drawn and be like, oh, they've got a snarky. Yeah. So anyway,
yeah, yeah.
We've gone down a rabbit trail. But this, the interesting thing I thought about this was in 2019, Kyle Starks is the writer. We frequently talk about how it's a writer's industry in terms of how people refer to the books. Yet the first line of this thing is hot off her breakout success at Marvel. Two-time Eisner Award winner Erica Henderson from Invincible Girl teams up with Kyle Starks.
She was far more the bigger name, and she still is. Right. No offense to Kyle.
No. I don't think he'd be offended by that, and I don't think he should be. I actually thought it was a little refreshing to see them lead with not just the artist, but also a female creator in their solicit. But it's also telling to the stature of where both creators were in 2019.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Well, and so they reference Rick and Morty there, right? For Kyle Starks.
Yes.
In that press release. Yeah. And I think both.
And they refer to it as the sales beast, Rick and Morty, meaning moves a lot of books. I'm like, was this written for comic shop owners?
Well, I think, the Rick and Morty fans they're not saying they're not comic fans per se. A lot of them obviously are, but I think Rick and Morty is one of those properties that, like, if you love Rick and Morty, you buy everything with it. It's kind of one of those properties. So, him being on that book for as long as he was, I think gave him some traction to allow him to do other things. A book like this, some other independent book, other independent books versus, that's very different than someone like Erica Henderson getting, albeit at the time, Squirrel Girl was like a nothing character, but the book that she did with Ryan North absolutely blew up, and it became like a must read at Marvel. It was critically acclaimed. It was a fantastic book. It makes sense in 2019 that she was the bigger name, because she was the name more people were going to know when they saw a solicit. They were going to say, oh, that's the artist from Unbreakable Squirrel Girl. That's where the eyes would have been, kind of in the larger comic industry. No one's really paying attention to Rick and Morty unless you're really into Rick and Morty. That's just how it is, so.
Yeah. So should we dive into Erica's work first?
Yeah, we can do that. Sure. I mean, Erica Henderson is someone that, she's one of the artists that has just, a unique style, a wildly unique style, I've read enough of her work and seen enough of it that, if I see her work on a cover or a variant cover or something like that, it's like, I know it's Erica Henderson. You're going to see it and know you're going to recognize her character design. You're going to see the way that, just her visual style is it stands out. And so, yeah, she's done a ton of covers and variant covers, Marvel and DC, all over the place. The book you're going to know, she worked in the Archieverse, I said, doing some stuff with Jughead. Again, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl with Ryan North. That's the book you're going to need to know that she's done. That's the highest profile, highest acclaim, highest sale, highest everything that she's done. When you see her name, not just in a press release for a book like Assassination, anytime you see your name anywhere, artist Erica Henderson, parentheses, first thing is going to say Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, like potentially for the rest of her career, which I don't know how creators feel about that. But as of now, that's how big that book was, that's how notable that work was. So if you like her style, if you like the way that she conveys story, go read about Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. It's a fantastic, fantastic book. That's her major work at Marvel. She's done some work at DC, probably most notably, she did some backup stories, some backup Harley Quinn stories, which were a lot of fun. Her style fits a character like Harley, much like it would fit a style like, fit a character like Doreen Green, Squirrel Girl. That when you're looking for kind of her big two stuff, it's Marvel. It's Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. The other book I would mention is one that I brought up, at the end of last year during our end of year rep episode, the car episode, which is a graphic novel that she did with, writer and letterer, Alex DeCampi, which is Parasocial.
Oh,
which was a, that's a modern take of it, it's a modern take on Misery based around on fan culture, convention culture, and things like that. Alex Campion and Eric Henderson working on that book just as an OGN is a fantastic, fantastic book. It's really, really good. So I would definitely recommend Parasocial. If you're looking for something else that Eric Henderson has done, if you think maybe that Squirrel Girl is not quite your speed, but it should be because Squirrel Girl was awesome.
It's Squirrel Girl, I just can't imagine not. I mean, how do you even say this? I don't know if you would like any Marvel comics if you can't enjoy Squirrel Girl.
Yeah, it's the thing where I think a lot of people,
you're just never going to read a superhero thing.
It does the thing that I think a lot of people complain about big two books doing, where it feels like, oh, everything's so interconnected. And it's like, well, I can't read Spider-Man because Spider-Man has like 15 other books that's it crossover with. Can't read X-Men because of that. I can't read Batman because there are 95 Bat Family books and I got to read all of them, blah, 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 blah. Squirrel Girl had this little pocket of the Marvel Universe that it existed within everything else. You know, it's in the same universe as everything else in the Marvel Universe, but it was allowed to be its own thing.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I read it in continuity with nothing else.
Yeah, well,
when I read that, it was the only Marvel book I was reading.
And it is commendable for Marvel then to understand and just basically give this book its space. You know, here, just allowing that book to exist and for it to go on as long as it did, obviously because it was so well regarded, is commendable, because you just don't see that now, where you're allowed to have a book of a very minor character. You know, I mean, Squirrel Girl had been around, but Squirrel Girl was like just like the butt of jokes for so many years, you know, and now it's I don't want to say they were tasked with rehabilitating the character, but that's kind of what they did. They made Squirrel Girl, if not important, I don't they made her important, but they made her they made her matter.
And they made her a household name.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the way to put it.
Like, I think everyone, you know, even people who didn't read Squirrel Girl, will say, oh, yeah, I've heard great things about that. Like, I've never heard anyone bash Squirrel Girl. I've heard people that are, like, indifferent, couldn't be bothered to pick it up. They will admit they've been told good things about it.
You can look at it and say it's not your speed. Again, going back to Erica's art style, it is not for everyone. You know, it is very specific in a way that turns some people off, and that's fine. You know, if there are plenty of artists that are well regarded that I look at their work and be like, I can't read this because it doesn't suit me. You know, it just I don't like looking at it on the page, not because it's bad per se, but because it just doesn't connect with me. The art style doesn't connect with me. So I get that, and that's something I think she's probably heard her entire career. You know, that her style wouldn't fit in major comic publishers. It doesn't fit the house style at Marvel or DC. But thankfully, you know, those notions are if not completely gone, definitely waning. You know, there is no longer a house style now. You can have books drawn by all manner of artists from all over the world, and there is no fear now, or less fear from the publishers, specifically Marvel and DC, of something looking, I don't know, too weird. You know, the fact that the Harley Quinn book can look radically different from the Suicide Squad book, and Harley can be in both, you know,
right?
Like they're no longer worried about that. And you can see Squirrel Girl pop up in other books, whether it's a U.S. Avengers book, or cameo in a Spider-Man book, or something like that, or whatever it is. You can see her around, and it doesn't matter if it looks like Eric Henderson's art anymore. You know, she can exist in her own book that way and be, you know, guest star somewhere else in a miniseries or an ongoing run. And there's no longer that cognitive there's no longer fear of that cognitive dissonance. They understand, they trust readers a little more, that they can take more risks than they had in the past. Maybe not as many risks as some readers think they should. I love seeing bigger risks from the major two publishers, but they're taking a lot more than they used to. And, you know, 20 years ago, an artist like Erica Henderson would never have gotten a big two book, you know, even a character like Squirrel at the time, like it just wouldn't have happened. So the fact that the industry has changed enough where someone with a very distinctive art style like hers can not only be put on a book, but be celebrated and championed, saying that this is a book that we're proud of, we want people to read, is a big shift in the industry that had been a long time coming. So yeah, if you like her art, if you find it fun, definitely check out some of those books from that she's worked on, you know, because they're really, really, really good. They're really a lot of fun. So especially Parasocial. I really loved Parasocial. That was a really, really cool
concept. That sounds like that's just going to be on our podcast at some point.
It might be at some point. We may have to circle back to that. There are the idea of modern day fan culture around comic book properties and IP, whether they're the comic books themselves, whether they're adaptations, all that stuff. That's a pretty fertile ground for storytelling done by comic creators. So maybe we put a theme month together or something like that, kind of a, you know, disparate books that are all covering the same sort of thing. I think that's something we can maybe get to, but Parasocial is a really fun book. So that's Erica Henderson. If you see her stuff out there, check it out. Like I said, also ton of variant covers, ton of main covers, even on maybe books that she's not doing interiors on. She's an artist that that has her fans and knows that publishers know if you put her on a book or have a put out a variant cover by her, it's one that people are going to seek out.
Yeah, you know, it's just there's been so many of our creators lately that are pushing me to like break the seal on Archie stuff, because Erica, I believe, did Chip Zdarsky's Jughead.
Yeah.
And I think that was another place that I've encountered. I have not read Chip Zdarsky's Jughead, but Liana was on here talking about getting started in comics with Archie. Mm-hmm. And then Sarah Gailey, they also told us like, Archie stuff.
If anyone wants to read, obviously the Archie universe is, you know, there's the whole Archie horror section, which is really fun if you like horror. If you want to jump into Archie, what I would recommend is they restarted the Archie universe in a modern sense in 2015 or 2016, I think. Mark Waid was writing, took over that line. The first three issues are drawn by Fiona Staples, who everyone knows from Saga.
Yeah.
She only lasted three issues, which that sucked because it was a big deal. Like Mark Waid, Fiona Staples. It was like Fiona Staples doing a book other than Saga, and it lasted three issues. But you know, that meant she could go back to dealing with Saga and kind of only Saga. But that's a really fun modern retelling of Archie. And that ran all the way up into 2020. And then when everything kind of shut down, they kind of shuttered that modern line, and they haven't gone back to it. There haven't been any new like mainline Archie books. They've done miniseries, various horror books and things like that, because they know those things sell. But in terms of like a mainline regular Archie book, hasn't been since 2020. But that's a really good line for anyone who, and I didn't read Archie growing up. I had no exposure to it, but I read that. It was really good. A lot of the spinoffs are good. And yeah, you know, Chip Zdarsky with Erica Henderson, that's a winning combination on just about anything. I don't care what that is. You know, it's going to be good.
And it does not matter the size or location of your Comic-Con. Any Comic-Con you go to will have someone who worked on some Archie property.
Oh yeah. It's just it's so wide ranging. And it's like it really saying,
will there be Star Wars cosplay there? It's like, yeah. Yeah, there's going to be Star Wars cosplay. There's going to be an Archie creator.
There's a ubiquity to something like Archie, to the point where, you know, I've mentioned Brubaker and Phillips, favorite creative team in comics. When they, you know, one of their volumes of Criminal, which is my second favorite comic of all time, volume six of that initial run is called Last the Innocents. And in that part of that story is this like bizarro Archie, like all the flashbacks it tells a story of this guy and his wife and them growing up and his friends, and anytime it flashes back to their teenage years, the art style changes to old school Archie style, like that Dan Parent kind of version. When you think of that old school Archie animation and cartooning, all of the flashbacks are done in that style, except they're like hitting bongs and stuff like that. Like they're doing like regular teenage stuff, not like, you know, 1950s Archie's teenage stuff. But that book is not reliant, but it uses the tropes of Archie and the understanding of what Archie is and what seeing those character designs are. So yeah, it's formative. So anyone who's worked on that, I don't want to say it's a rite of passage, but I think it's something that a lot of comic creators maybe seek out and want to have on the resume just to say they've done it. So yeah, again, you know, Chip Zdarsky, Erica Henderson, that's going to be great on any book, on any line.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Should we talk about Kyle?
Yeah, sure. Kyle Starks. You know, he's kind of all over the map. He's worked with a lot of different publishers, almost all the major publishers. I think he really got his start over at Oni Press. We mentioned Rick and Morty. That was kind of his first major ongoing gig. He came onto that book. He didn't start writing, but he came on like issue 4 or 5 or something like that. And it went for a decent amount of time where he kind of had a regular gig writing Rick and Morty and doing all that over at Oni. Oni eventually published his OGN novel, graphic novel, Kill 'Em All, which I believe started as a Kickstarter. That was a book that Kyle wrote and drew himself. I think he had someone color that book for him, but he wrote and drew it himself. It's another book about assassins and hitmen, which is a reoccurring theme in a lot of Kyle's stuff. But Kill 'Em All is a really fun, kind of wacky, bizarre, kind of ultra-violent book. Recently got optioned. It was announced that it's been optioned by Paramount Pictures. Sam Hargrave, who is the director of the Extraction films. If you've seen those over on Netflix, they star Chris Hemsworth. Those are just like straight up. Sam Hargrave comes from the Chad Stahelski coaching tree. Chad Stahelski is the director of the John Wick films. So it's in that same kind of lineage. And when you read a book like Kill 'Em All or even like Assassination, like I think of Assassination as like absurdist John Wick, you know? Like,
oh, it
has that feel to it. So
there's not a technical continental, but it is like the idea that there is a formal organization
there's formality.
Not incorporated, but there's like, yeah, there's yeah, formality. There's ranking,
some formality to professional hits and assassins and things like that. So Kill 'Em All is a fun book over at Oni Press. Another book that Kyle Starks did over there called Dead of Winter, which is a zombie book where he wrote that one. Art was Gabriel Bautista. That's a zombie. It's a zombie book, zombie horror book, where the main star is a TV dog, a dog who starred on television, like a Lassie type character who is out there now in a zombie apocalypse. So that's the main thrust of that book. Dogs, pets, big thing in a lot of Kyle's works too. Just as much as Hitman too. Hitman and assassins. He likes those things. Over at Image, you know, where Assassination is, probably the book he's known for now, because it just recently wrapped up, is I Hate This Place. He did that with, I think it's pronounced Artyon Topalin. I probably butchered that, but I Hate This Place just wrapped up at Image. That was a really fun, weird book. Probably one of his least straight up funny books, you know, like one of his least like trying to be funny books, but still very funny book.
Still the Eisner winner for
best humor publication. But the humor publication is such a weird category. Like I remember the Batman Elmer Fudd one shot that Tom King did with Lee Weeks.
Yes,
that was nominated in the humor category
because it's Elmer Fudd.
Because it was a Looney Tunes crossover, yeah. To the point where I believe even Tom King was like, I don't understand why my book's in the humor category. So the humor publication is a very strange, very, very strange Eisner category that generally does not make a whole lot of sense. But I Hate This Place, very good book on Image. Rock Candy Mountain was a book an early book that Kyle Starks did. He wrote and drew that one himself, and he had colors there done by Chris Schweitzer. He worked with Chris Schweitzer again on Six Sidekicks of Trigger Keen, where Schweitzer actually did the art for that one, art and colors, with Starks just doing the writing. And then another early book, one of his earliest books, and I think that was also a Kickstarter back then, which was Sex Castle, which is another book about the world's former greatest assassin. Right. That was an OGN that he had out there. I think that one and Kill 'Em All, I believe those initially started as Kickstarters back in the day. But, you know, he's at a point now where he doesn't quite need to do that. You did mention Peacemaker Tries Hard over at DC. For anyone who, you know, that is basically bringing the John Cena Peacemaker fully into continuity, to the point now when Peacemaker shows up in other books, like in either maybe Suicide Squad or in the current Green Arrow run, when Peacemaker shows up now, it's the John Cena Peacemaker. Like, that is now canon in the comics.
Right.
Any version that existed before doesn't matter now. He looks like John Cena. The way he speaks, his formality, the way, you know, when you saw him in James Gunn's Suicide Squad or in the show, that kind of overly pompous way that Cena plays a character, that's who the character is now. And so if you're a fan of the show, if you're a fan of what that show is on HBO Max, pick up Peacemaker Tries Hard.
Which I'll say, by the way, I was not a huge fan of like the James Gunn Suicide Squad. Never watched the Peacemaker show and enjoyed the Peacemaker Tries Hard book because I felt like, and I think I may have said this to you off air some other time, but I was like, it feels to me like that would be like if you gave the MCU Drax his own book, where it's just very one note, one joke.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Kyle did quite a bit more with it than that.
Yeah, in the Suicide Squad movie, it's the same joke over and over again. Every time he talks to someone, interacts with someone, it's the same joke over and over again. The show does expand that out. The show is very funny because I think Cena is very good at playing this kind of role, this very kind of large, strong, but obviously dim-witted kind of character. You know,
right?
He plays that very well. I think the joke tends to run thin a little bit after a while, but it's got a ton of fans of the show. The opening credits are great. If you like that book, pick up Peacemaker Tries Hard. Added bonus, the art is done by Steve Pugh, you know, one of our favorites who did the Flintstones with Mark Russell. So you know that outside of whatever jokes and gags that are written in the script, that there's going to be some just incredibly funny stuff and random stuff in the art as well, because that's just how Steve Pugh rolls. So Peacemaker Tries Hard. Again, a fan of the show. If you like what Cena's doing, check that book out. He also did a entries in the current Batman Brave and the Bold anthologies. He did a 3 or 4 part story on a character called a Wild Dog, lesser known kind of character, but in the same vein as kind of Peacemaker, again, the kind of like D-level, street-level vigilante.
Well, now I think you wouldn't know this, but Wild Dog did have like a 2 or 3 season run on the Arrow show.
Yes. Well, yeah, yes.
So it's like
this version
of the name recognition, right?
A little bit there. Not someone you've seen in the comics very much, but those Brave and the Bold stories are 8-10 pages, something like that. You know, there's usually 4 of them per anthology. And I think that was a 3 or 4 part book that Kyle wrote there with Fernando Passarin, I believe, on art. I think that's what it is. Again, I'm probably butchering that one too.
That's what over we do at here Marvel on this podcast.
Yeah. Over at Marvel, hasn't done a bunch. The main thing he's done recently is Marvel Unleashed, aka Pet Avengers. The one thing, I guess the pet sidekicks are everywhere. You know, they're all over the DC comic universe as well. People love Pet Avengers, or the idea of the Pet Avengers, and so they gave Kyle Starks the key on this one. The art on that book is Jesus Hervas. I believe that's probably how it's pronounced. It's a really fun book. He created a new character named D-Dog, interacting with all of the other kind of animal characters. Yeah, Throg, Chewie. And what's really fun about that is a character like Chewie. I'm not going to call him Goose because that doesn't make any sense in the Captain Marvel movie. But the Flurkin character is that he got to have Goose talk, you know?
Right.
Versus just interacting with him. There's someone like Thorys in the book, I believe. Bats was Doctor Strange's ghost dog. Some of the animals do talk. Throg, it's weird to call it Pet Avengers because Throg isn't someone's pet. He's a dude who was turned into a frog. It's a long story. So it's it's more like Animal Avengers versus Pet Avengers. Yeah.
I remember on, it's either Binge Mode or X-Ray Vision, that Jason Concepcion was talking about how much he would love a Pet Avengers movie.
Yeah.
And he was listening, you know, he started with Goose and then he mentioned Rocket and then he kind of chuckled to himself and he's like, Rocket probably wouldn't like be called someone's pet. And I think them calling it Marvel Unleashed.
Get them around that. Yes.
Sort of, but you only leash a pet. So it's like, you didn't come out and call them pets.
Yeah, I guess true. That is true. That is true. Rocket, I will say, not in this book. So it's not just all Animal Avengers. It is mostly, it is those animal characters that are
sidekicks.
Essentially considered sidekicks. Again, that would, Brog would probably take offense to that as well. But it's a really fun book.
Well, he can get his own title and then he can take offense.
Yeah, getting all those characters together and seeing how they interact with each other. It's especially, it is really especially fun to see Chewie there, because Chewie is not a cat. Chewie is a Flerken, yet everything he does, the way he acts, the way he presents, the way he interacts with the other animals is very much cat-like. You know, so it isn't just that he looks like a cat. He looks like a common earthbound house cat, even though he is an alien race. Chewie still just comes off as a cat. He presents as a cat. His attitude is what we think of if cats could think and talk, how they would be. So that's a really fun book. And it's one of those titles that people, I don't want to say clamor for, but it's like, wouldn't it be funny if all the animal characters got together and had their own title? You know, it's something that people always talk about.
I think because of that, it's hard to deliver on.
Well, it is. Yeah. It is.
Because people build it up in their heads of like, oh, it's going to be so epic when they do this. And it's like, but like, what's the story? Very few people have the pitch.
Well, and I think part of it is you can get around some of that, because I think a lot of it is just, it becomes less about, and I think the Marvel Unleashed story, not that it doesn't have a good story, the selling point of Marvel Unleashed is the interaction between the characters. You want to see the animals work together, how they interact, how they talk to each other, and things like that.
And
that
to be clear,
is much more fun, yes.
That is Kyle Stark's bread and butter. Kyle Starks is a character guy.
Yeah.
And he loves those character moments. The little like offbeat ones when the adventure isn't necessarily going and the plot is sitting still for a moment and you just find out something weird about a character and the other character's like, what, really, seriously? He's great at that. And I think that it's a certain level of depth that in the economy of single issue storytelling, I think is something too many writers cut out. And I remember, Jason Concepcion was talking about his love of like 90s X-Men. And he said, you know, it'd be like the end of a big epic something, whatever. And then they're back playing baseball at the mansion. And he said that was always his favorite part of the stories. And I never having read any of that stuff, any X-Men stuff or any 90s stuff, really, I was like, I don't really see the appeal. And then every once in a while, I'm like, oh, wait, why is that one scene after the cocktail party, everyone's favorite scene in Age of Ultron, when they're all talking about who can lift the hammer, because it's one of those moments from comics, and it just gave some oxygen to a film that was otherwise starved for that kind of character oxygen.
And that's the stuff you need. And obviously it works in a cinematic sense because you have a room full of incredibly talented actors and they get to just cook and be actors, you know, have fun with it, you know, and those are moments in the comics you can have. Yeah, you can take a break and have a couple pages of them playing baseball, of them, you know, on the way to the mission. What are those interactions? How do they talk to each other? And when you have a book like Marvel Unleashed, which are all these animal characters together who you don't see together, you know, they're interacting with their, you know, their respective humans and things like that, to seeing these animals isolated together, that's what the draw of the book is. That's where the fun is. And then at that point, the story, like what their mission is, effectively becomes inconsequential. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, I hate to say it like that, but it really doesn't. The selling point of this book is how those animals work together, how they talk to each other, how they view each other too, in terms of relation of, like how they view the other quote unquote sidekicks to their humans, you know, like what service and what utility they have to their respective humans is very funny as well. So it's all about that interaction. So Marvel Unleashed is super, super fun. You know, it's the kind of book that, like, if DC decided to do a Justice League thing, you know, with Crypto and Streaky and Jumpa, Ace, they can go through all the various, I mean, I don't know, Detective Chip would fall in the category of Rocket if he would probably be offended by that. But if they put that whole book together like that as well, someone like Kyle Starks is who I'd want to write it, you know, whether or not he want to do another pet team up book, don't know, but he's the kind of person I would trust to get those relationships right. Cause a lot of them, he has to invent out a whole cloth. He has to decide how would these characters interact with each other, you know, based right. on what you know about them. In when you see them in their other books, how would they view each other? He has to make that up and decide what that is. And I think with Marvel Unleashed, he did a great job with that. So again, not a whole lot of big two stuff there, you know, those are the main ones I think out of Marvel and DC. Some other books I think that are worth noting, over at Dark Horse, he has a very weird, very kind of disturbed book called Where Monsters Lie. That's with artist Piotr Kowalski. It's about a gated community where serial killers go and hang out when they're not serial killing. Like it's their community where they can go and like talk about their kills and like get some R&R.
Sure. Everybody needs it.
It's a very disturbing book. Again, very funny. Obviously on the comedy horror side there, but that's an interesting read over at Dark Horse. He has a book over at Whatnot Publishing, which used to be Massive, or still is called Massive. I'm not quite certain. It's called Alpha Betas with Michael Calero. That's a book I have not read from him. But the one that's going on right now as you're recording this over at Boom, which I'm enjoying a lot, is Pine and Mary Mac. And that's with artist Fran Gallon. And that is the one book that I would say of the ones I've listed that I've read that is not overtly meant to be funny. There are some very funny things that happen in it, both situational and character-wise. But that is not one that could even accidentally be nominated in the Best Humor Publication Eisner category. You know, it is not meant to be that. But I think it is excellent. I think Fran Gallon is an incredible artist whose work I need to see now.
Those covers alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you look at that cover and don't, if that doesn't draw you in, I mean, don't buy it. But like, I just can't fathom being a comic fan, someone who reads indie comics, and seeing Pine and Merrimack and not just leaping at that cover.
It's him writing. It's Kyle Starks writing a detective noir story. You know, it is a Brubaker Phillips type kind of mystery detective story, you know, just with his kind of spin on it, you know, his kind of take on it. And it is excellent. I'm absolutely loving that book. And that is, as recording, it's ongoing right now. I think 3 issues are out, out of 5 or 6 or something like that. It's a little mini series, but I cannot recommend Pot and Mary Mac highly enough. I think it's a fantastic book, and it's one of my favorite reads every month when it comes out. So,
and just there was a limited run on this, but Erica Henderson did do a variant for that just to tie mm-hmm. everything back together. That a dime store novel, just the coolest cover.
Yeah, because it's a modern day story, but it's a noir detective story. So anytime you have a book like that, one of the things you can bet on is that they're going to do a variant cover, at least for one of them, that looks like straight up out of a pulp serial novel. You know, it's going to have that design that, when I say that, you picture what that's supposed to look like. And yes, that's what the cover looks like. And that's the kind of thing you can do anytime you have this type of story. Erica's cover is awesome for that. I think that was for issue one. I don't think they've done,
pulp
serial novels. They haven't done those pulp serial variants for all of them, but you know, those types of themes for variant covers are always very cool when they do that. Where, because you could also do this in a way, you could, you know, Erica's cover for her variant is that is like the dime store novel. You could also do like the vintage movie poster, you know, you could do right. it that way as well, which is, you know, the, again, those are your Maltese Falcon type era stories. You can do that for a cool variant cover, and Pine and Merrimack would fit perfectly in that category. It's about a couple of pirate eyes. So that's a really, really fun book over at Boom that I'm really, really enjoying. I know it's only like a little mini series, but that's a book that I could, you know, again, it's about a couple of PIs. Like, maybe they could go and have another case after this one, you know, that sort of thing. I'd love to see it. So those are the highlights of Kyle Starks. Again, said when you read his stuff, whatever genre it is, maybe Pine and Merrimack aside, it's going to be blank comedy, you know, horror comedy, action comedy, something of that nature. You know,
right? Yeah, I mean, farcical is the word, because the word I was thinking of in my prep, which I cut from my notes after researching more, I was like, I wanted to call it screwball comedy, just because.
It's not screwball. No,
it's not. It's not, because I didn't really know what that term meant.
Yeah.
But I was like, what's just the word for it? Where it's like the characters are goofy, or even the characters tend to be aloof and the situations are goofy. You know, it's always some kind of twisting the world like that to get humor out of what could just as easily be described as a non-humorous situation, right?
Yeah.
Assassination, you take the humor out of it and it's 20 assassins hired to protect one assassin.
Yeah.
That could just as easily be a 2-hour, like, gritty action movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, no doubt. I mean, you take the humor out of it and you get something like John Wick, you know, you stylize the action and you get like this, you know, you get the gun fu, you get the cool fights and things like that. That's what Assassination would be, because it's just a whole bunch of highly trained hitmen. Like, that's all the book is. So, real quick, the last person we should mention on this book is the letterer, Darren Bennett. Darren Bennett has done, as a letterer, done a ton of work for DC and Boom, especially in the last like 10-ish years. You'll see his name a ton on DC books, both at the end of New 52 and into the Rebirth era. Also a bunch of Boom books. Not a whole lot of Image. He has this book at Image and another really cool book called Excellence over at Image. Excellence is a really, really neat book. It's the premise is it's our world with magic, but only Black people can do magic. And so it deals with the racial aspect of it. It also has this palace intrigue of who gets to control magic, because magic is, you know, it's very hereditary. And so who are the powerful families within the Black community that can do magic? It's a very cool, gorgeous art on that book. It's an all Black creative team from writer, artist, colorist, and letterer. So it's a really, really cool book. I think it's 11 or 12 issues that was coming out 2018, 2019, 2020, something like that. Really cool book. But again, not a lot of Image stuff, mostly DC and Boom in terms of what Darren Bennett has done as a letterer. He also has a lot of credits over at Ahoy Comics as an associate editor. So I don't know which is his main gig, whether it's being a letterer or being an editor, but over at Ahoy, he has a position as an associate editor. Ahoy is the home of a lot of Mark Russell's current stuff. If we go back and review the Zero episode for Mark Russell that we did, his book Second Coming, which is about, you know, basically Jesus Christ comes down and he rooms with the Superman analog of the world. That was supposed to be at DC. I think Vertigo is still around then. And then they after some pushback before it was even published, it got shut down, and then it was eventually revived over at Ahoy. And since then, Mark Russell has done a ton of stuff at Ahoy in the subsequent years. So any of his books over at Ahoy, and not just Mark Russell written books, but a lot of the stuff, you'll see Darren Bennett's name there as an associate editor. So it's kind of like over at the big two, or really just at DC, the for hire work, he's working as a letterer. You know, you'll see his name on you know, Batman or Batgirl or Birds of Prey, whatever the random book is, you'll see his name as a letterer. But over on the indie side, the creator owned side, over at Ahoy, he's working there as an associate editor. So it's kind of cool seeing a guy who can wear multiple hats on for various different occasions. So, and I'm sure it helps, you know, just, you know, well, better, well-rounded and more knowledgeable of what the industry is going through and how we can bring as an editor working to help his work as a letterer, and as a letterer seeing things that help him as an editor as well. So that's Darren Bennett, the last person there listed on the credits for Assassination.
Yeah. All right. So I think we've kind of hinted at basically as much as we can without giving away plot. But
yeah.
Is there anything else you want to say about the book? I have one note here, which is that if you have the choice, and this is not a big deal, but if you can have the choice to read it in single issue rather than trade,
yeah,
I suggest that just because there is a title page only in single issue for each issue. Yeah.
I can sense you're dancing around this. I think we can say this without spoiling it. So as we mentioned in the synopses,
the non-spoiler is to say it's just ranking.
Well, yeah. So it specifically calls out the 20 best assassins in the world. And maybe you're thinking, how do they know who the 20 best assassins are? Well, it's because there is a ranking system. Like, this is like a sports ranking system where there is someone who has the title of number one assassin in the world. And so at the beginning of each single issue, there are updated rankings of where the characters stand in the top 20. So we can say that, yeah, so it's a fun, it serves as both a recap page and also it reminds you who the characters are, you know, because there are a lot of them. There's a lot to keep track of. You see, you know, who's involved, where they are. You can see how they move around, and it's a fun, it's really just a kind of a fun visual gag to open each issue with. And in the collected edition, they only do that in the opening and then at the very, very end to close the book out, which is, it's not nearly as narratively funny that way, which is unfortunate that those pages got cut out. So if you can find it in single issue, I think that extra little bit, that literal one page, is very rewarding. And I think it adds a lot to the story.
Well, I mean, and you were with me. I bought, it's not a scarcity issue in the sense that there was a big run on it. The scarcity issue is how many were in print. How many did your shop order, you know, that weren't subscriptions. But I was with you and I bought it. I bought the entire set. Somebody had like just a bag with all five issues in it for $15 new or something. And I was like, absolute steal. I mean, probably the same price as the trade.
Yeah, I mean, this is a book you can probably find either in the back issue section of a local shop. You can probably find it at a used shop, like a Half Price Book, something like that. You know, if it's one that has a decently organized comic section, it's a book that's available in single issue. You know, even number ones are often always gobbled up. It's not a book that's going to hold any value or has any value like that. So, it's just a fun little added thing that really they could have included in the trade. You know, it would have served as a little more definitive chapter breaks, issue breaks. You know, they could have done that. So it's unfortunate that those weren't included, because I do think they're additive to the story. They're fun to have, and it's just to see the updated rankings, to see how that world works, is just a fun little extra tidbit to the story.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add to this? I mean, I think we've given a pretty good sales pitch for it.
Yeah. The only thing, the last thing I will say is, it's a book about assassins. So it's a gory book. It's comedic gory. Cause again, the right, way yes. that Erica yeah. Henderson draws, there's humor to it, but yeah, no, a lot of people die, a lot of blood, a lot of body parts, you know, and people die in some absurd fashions and funny fashions and very straightforward assassin fashions. But like, there's a lot of people dying because these are literal assassins. They're hitmen. They kill people. So it happens in all kinds of ways. It is not a book for children, which I don't know if we need to say that going into it. Do we want to say what the name of one of the characters is?
How about this? Yeah. We'll tell you if we cover a book for children.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think we've done it yet. Maybe Outpost Zero.
Outpost Zero is a YA book.
I do think there is a character that I'll remind you, we will discuss the book next week in depth, but we are a family-friendly rated podcast. Yeah. So we'll just be referring to that character by his last name, I think.
Okay. All right, fine. All right. That's fine. That's fair.
Or we could call him what the person he's named after in real life. But
no, we're not gonna do that. We won't do that. We won't do that. But yeah, it is a weird, very absurd is the word that comes to mind because the situation is so ridiculous. But there is as absurd as the situation is, because it's a Kyle Starks book, what ends up being important are who these characters are and how they end up relating to each other. It's not quite a found family thing, you know, but it's on those same kind of lines. It's a character book. It just happens to be set in the world of a bunch of assassins that are all really good, because if there's a top 20, that means there's a whole lot more that aren't top 20. You know, there are enough assassins in the world operating that there can be a top 20, and that can matter. You know, if they're only so there are highly competent assassins who are also competitors who yet have to work together because they've all been hired to be this one guy's bodyguard. You know, so it's a fun book. It's a funny book. It's a very weird and sometimes disturbing book. But I think it's a really fun read. If you like, what were those movies that were in that image description? Tropic Thunder was one.
Tropic Hot Thunder Fuzz. Was one. Yeah, Hot Fuzz was the other.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
they're fair.
There are. I would say this goes a little more toward. I mean, the action comedy is really a dying genre. I mean, I mentioned the Extraction movies. Because of the Kill 'Em All adaptation that directed by Sam Hargreaves. We don't have action comedy, we have action movies now, you know, whether it's like, you know, Triple Frontier action movie, John Wick action movies. And those movies are rad. I love them. They're awesome. But they're not the action comedy movies that you would see.
Last Action Hero.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, which, I was going to say.
Like, isn't a great movie.
I was going to say something like True Lies. I was going to go a different
Schwarzenegger movie. I was going to say Kindergarten Cop.
Yes.
And yeah, I think that is the walk in the line.
That genre is gone. So really, if you're a fan of the 90s action comedy movies, 80s and 90s action comedies, this falls in line with that. I do get something like Tropic Thunder or Hot Fuzz is a more contemporary but those are so few and far between now. You know, action movies are very
they're not that timely. I mean, those are like at least 10 years old now, right?
That's why I said more contemporary.
Right, yeah.
It proves the point of what I'm trying to say of that they don't make them like that. Because now action is all about the action. You have to show how good you are at the action, how real it looks, how cool you can, you can depict it on screen. It's all about that gunplay, hand fight play, all of that. That's where the focus is. The action comedy stuff was more about the situation. It was fun. You know, the characters were fun. The characters had fun in it. So if you're a fan of that genre of storytelling, and maybe that's a generational thing, you know, Kyle is a handful of years older than me. I think he's probably about as old as the age difference between me and Kyle, I think, is the same as between you and me, Mike. It's about that range. So he's a little older, but you know, the movies that he would have grown up on are similar movies that at least I would have seen back in the day as well. So that style of storytelling, I have a similar fondness to, really, because you know, in my best old man yells at cloud voice, they don't make them like that anymore. You know. And this is a throwback to that kind of story. So it's fun. It's weird. It's absurd. It's violent. But it's a really good story. It's a really good story. And it's a really good comic that folks should read.
Yeah. I absolutely love it. I'm not sure I'll have scratched my Kyle Starks itch entirely after doing just this one book. But, you know, perhaps we can revisit later in the year when Pine and Merrimack is finished or something.
There are options out there.
And I'll probably say this again next week, but if you enjoyed this book, you will absolutely love Six Sidekicks of Trigger Keaton.
Yeah, yeah. There are a lot of similar themes. Six Sidekicks came out 2 or 3 years after, I think, after this book. And there's you can see a lot of the ideas and themes that he was maybe working on in Assassination that maybe he didn't feel. You can almost see, like, he looks at that book and be like, yeah, you know, maybe I didn't quite land this part or anything like that. And you can see how it reworks into Six Sidekicks. I'm not saying that Six Sidekicks is a better book or more polished book, but you can see him working through similar-ish ideas.
Yeah, he might say that.
I mean, he might say that. He might say that. But I think if you read them back to back, you can see the parallels. And I think you can see the growth as a writer of being like, okay, you know what? I tried this the first time around in Assassination, and maybe it didn't land as well as I think it could have. And so let me take a different spin on it in Six Sidekicks and see how it works there. So yeah, they really are companions type books. Because the kind of the basic gist, the underlying theme of both those books are very, very similar. So, but yeah, there it's maybe that's one that as a spiritual sequel, you know, it's something that we're not above doing.
I think it's similar to like cognitic mimetic connection where it's
of course,
like,
you know, of course, those
not
being
officially related.
Yeah. But those had a little more intentionality to it. But I think here there is kind of a spiritual sequel in terms of, you could tell that as a writer, Kyle Starks was still
kicking around that concept.
Yeah, wanted to revisit some of those ideas again and see if he could come at them from a little different angle, a little different viewpoint.
All right. Well, without any further ado, I will say we will see you next week. Join me and Alex back here with Wistful Stan, Desert Regal, Wintergreen, Meat Stick, and Smush Meat Walker, Stick. Just to name a few.
El Sicario. Among many, many more. Among many, many more. Yeah.
If nothing else, read this book just for the names of the characters, including.
They're so good.
No spoilers, number 20.
Yeah. The names and character designs alone for all the assassins. Because if you watch a lot of movies about hitmen and assassins, you will see those kind of archetypes. You know, you'll see that kind of assassin from that kind of movie. You know, that hitman from that kind of gang or whatnot. They're all represented. They all have a flair and style to them, and they all have just impeccable names.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll see you back here with the Mama Twins next week.
Peace.